I've had the pleasure of introducing Dave usually every time he's here, and he's here often. Dave is a senior scientist at Continental Electronics. Before rejoining them 3 years ago, he was at Xcerra ADC Broadcast Systems for 6 years, with Continental for 5 years, Grass Valley for a dozen years, and Harris Broadcast for 8 years. He's got 19 patents, and it says here, more in the pipe. Right, the pipe, all right? He holds a bachelor's degree in mathematics and a master's in electrical engineering. Dave Hershberger.
Thank you, Cliff. Okay, I got to set up my own laptop here because I'm using Presenter View, and also have a bunch of audio files to play later in this presentation. I'd like to thank the SBE and the WBA and all of you for the opportunity to make this presentation today. The topic is elevated FM HD IBOC power and protecting the analog signal. Now, one of Continental's specialties is high power. We build megawatt level transmitters from VLF to microwave, so we're not afraid of elevated HD power. 10% digital power produces a peak envelope power, or PEP, of almost three times the analog power and over three times for the extended hybrid mode. We would love to sell everybody transmitters rated for 10% digital power, but we don't want customers coming back to us and saying, "Why did you sell me this thing?" after finding out about the self-noise effects. Now, engineering is a trade-off, and additional digital power might have some unintended consequences. Each station will be different, and you must make your own decisions about what digital power level to use. You want enough digital power, but not too much, for reasons we will discuss. Today, I'll try to provide some information to allow you to make the best choices. We're going to start with basic theory, then simulation of FM systems, objective testing with hardware, and finally, subjective testing in the form of some listening tests. We're going to play some audio files here. If you ask industry people what they think about HD, you usually get one of two rather polarized opinions. Either it's the best thing that's ever happened to FM radio, or it's the worst thing. Now, neither is really correct. The truth is somewhere between these two extremes. First, the reason for the allowed digital power increase is to extend the digital coverage area. More digital power will certainly do this. There may be increased adjacent channel interference. This has already been discussed extensively, so I won't be addressing this issue at all here. Self-interference and increased sensitivity to multipath are less well known, and this is what we will concentrate on today. This slide sets out some of the more interesting numbers associated with 1, 4, and 10% digital power injection levels. Intuitively, we might not think that 10% would have a very big effect on anything, but it does. It all has to do with peak to average ratios, square roots, and squares. These little mathematical operations conspire to produce some possibly surprising results. At 10% digital, we have 63% AM, and we need 53.3 kilowatts PEP for a 20 kilowatt analog signal. The ratio becomes even larger for the extended hybrid modes. The point is that elevated HD power means that there is a lot of AM on the hybrid signal. Now let's look at what that 63% envelope modulation means. If we draw the analog FM signal as the black vector and the digital signal as the red vector, then the blue vector shown on the slide is the resultant envelope at the negative modulation peaks. For 1% digital power, we have about 20% AM. At the negative modulation troughs, we still have 80% of our signal to work with. The analog signal would have to fade 14 dB relative to the digital sidebands to pinch off the envelope. At 10% digital power, the envelope drops to 37% of normal on negative envelope peaks, and that's only 4 dB. From a relative fading from pinch-off. The danger for analog reception of FM is that if the vector length goes to zero, then the receiver produces noise bursts. Remember that an analog FM receiver contains a hard limiter. The hard limiter is a device whose gain is equal to the reciprocal of the input signal's envelope. So if the envelope goes to zero, an ideal limiter's gain goes to infinity. A practical limiter will output noise bursts if its envelope on the input signal pinches off. So if there's a slight amount of multipath causing only 4 dB of differential fading between the analog and digital components of a signal, the envelope of the receiver may pinch off on a transient basis, causing noise bursts on analog receivers. In other words, the digital may capture the analog FM demodulator. This shows that peak-to-average ratio reduction is a good thing. Reducing positive modulation peaks significantly reduces transmitter PEP requirements, but reducing the negative envelope modulation improves the capture fade margin for receivers. At 1% digital power, the hard limiter's gain increases by only 1.9 dB on the negative modulation peaks. At 4%, we need 4.4 dB limiter gain, and at 10%, the limiter's gain must go up to 8.7 dB. As the limiter's gain goes up, it also brings up noise interference and multipath by the same amount. But many will point out that the digital sidebands are filtered out before the hard limiter, so there's no problem. This is true to an extent. Unfortunately, that extent is highly variable. Here's a plot of a typical FM bandpass filter made by Murata with an iBox spectrum superposed on the same plot to the same scale. Murata makes monolithic ceramic bandpass filters that are used in many FM radios. They come in a variety of bandwidths. Electronically tuned car radios tend to have narrower bandwidths, and continuously tuned radios, such as the one on the nightstand in your hotel room here, tend to have wider IF filters to make tuning less critical. This filter has a nominal bandwidth of 230 kHz. It's a narrow type that might be used in a synthesized receiver. Careful inspection of the catalog curves show that the iBox sidebands are reduced about 4 dB where they start and about 17 dB where they end. This is a good thing. If the sidebands can be reduced in amplitude before the hard limiter, then there's less danger of digital capture. Here's one of Murata's wider filters. This filter has a nominal bandwidth of 350 kHz. This one has negligible attenuation at the iBox sidebands. So receivers with this kind of filter, which would give very good analog FM demodulation, are much more susceptible to self-noise and differential fading multipath. Receivers with this kind of selectivity curve will get the full effect of iBox sidebands. Here's the basic self-noise mechanism for iBox into analog FM. The red vector, representing the sum of the iBox carriers, rotates with respect to the larger analog FM vector. When the iBox carrier is near a right angle with respect to the analog FM, it produces the maximum phase change of the analog FM vector. Basically, it's a beat note. The beat note creates phase modulation of the analog FM signal. And the time derivative of that phase modulation demodulates as FM noise. The graphic shows an example at one instant in time. The more iBox power you have, the longer the red vector gets, and that produces more phase modulation, which in turn results in more FM noise. Now, this drawing is to scale, showing the locus of points that the peak digital signal may reach at 1% power in green and at 10% power in red. At 1% digital power, we have a peak phase modulation of 11.5 degrees in a wide bandwidth. At 10% power, the phase modulation increases to 39 degrees in a wide bandwidth. Now let's figure out how much FM noise this makes and where it shows up. It helps to look at the frequency domain when analyzing the effects of HD sidebands on the analog signal. Let's start by looking at a signal with a 1 kHz monotone with iBox present. And let's start by turning off the modulation. Now we have no modulation at all of the FM carrier. This results in a pretty simple analysis, at least for the first order terms. We can expect to see first order phase modulation components beginning at 129 kHz and going up to 198 kHz. The iBox sidebands start at 129 kHz away from channel center and go up to 198 kHz away. These components are due to the simple beat notes between the FM carrier and each one of the iBox carriers. These high-frequency components will not be a problem to the demodulated stereo unless the stereo demodulator responds to harmonics of 38 kHz. Now imagine what happens if you modulate the analog with a very low frequency. Let's say we're modulating 100% at 20 Hz. The modulation is now so slow that we can think of it as a single carrier sweeping back and forth from minus 75 to plus 75 kilohertz. And since the frequency is low, it will spend a significant amount of time at those 75 kilohertz modulation peaks. Here's what the carrier looks like when it hits a modulation peak. Now the beat notes have changed significantly. Now the lowest first order beat note is plus 75 kilohertz, beating with plus 129 kilohertz. This produces a beat note of 54 kilohertz. Stereo L minus R ends at 53 kilohertz. So that means you don't want to overdeviate. If you can imagine what comes out of the FM demodulator in this situation, we have a block of first order beat notes that slosh back and forth from 54 up to 273 kilohertz that are driven by the FM deviation. If that was all that came out of the FM demodulator, the analog signal, with a possible exception of the SCAs and RDS, would be pristine. But FM demodulation and the beat note generation process is quite nonlinear. The FM demodulation process consists of, it takes derivatives of arctangent functions, which can make a real mess in the frequency domain. And let's take a look at that. What you're about to see are the results of some simulations. The simulations show what happens to the analog FM in the presence of different levels of HD injection with different kinds of receiver bandpass filtering and analog modulation. First, we begin with an FM plus HD signal. Then we may filter the signal. The filter may simulate a receiver's bandpass filter, multipath propagation, or both. Next, the filtered FM plus HD signal is applied to a perfect numerical FM demodulator. Finally, we do a spectrum analysis of what comes out of the FM demodulator. This allows us to see noise and distortion in the frequency domain, but first we'll look at the time domain analysis. Some of the simulations we're about to see were done with full blast IBOC power with no bandwidth limiting, and that simulates a wideband receiver. Simulations of a narrowband receiver were done with this linear phase FIR filter that closely approximates the response of the narrow Murata filter shown earlier, except this was really a better filter because it's linear phase. This filter slopes from minus 4 to minus 17 dB across the IBOC sideband blocks, the same way the Murata narrow filter does. The resulting attenuation of the IBOC sideband energy is 6.7 dB overall, so 10% digital power through this filter becomes 2.1% afterwards. Now, in a wide bandwidth with no de-emphasis, this is the time domain signal that comes out of the FM demodulator at 10% digital power. This is one cycle of 1.9 kHz mono, and the noise riding on it is due to the digital sidebands. Now, this is a very scary picture. But fortunately, the situation is not as bad as it looks. Let's throw in the sharp IF filter to knock the IBOC sidebands down, the 6.7 dB, and the post-detection 53 kHz brick wall filter to limit the bandwidth to just the stereo composite baseband. These two measures get rid of the great majority of the unwanted FM. This waveform is not nearly as scary. All we see is a little bit of noise, mostly at the peaks of the sine wave. The noise appears mainly at those peaks because those are the points where the carrier has deviated 75 kilohertz, placing it much closer to the IBOC blocks of sidebands. So the first order beat notes are lower and they start to sneak inside the 53 kilohertz low pass filter's passband at those modulation peaks. Now let's make a distortion analyzer numerically. This is 1% digital power with a brick wall 53 kilohertz low pass, but no IF filtering. The green trace is the demodulator output, and the red trace is the output of a notch filter, which removes the 1.9 kilohertz fundamental tone. So the red trace is the demodulated noise. It's also shown on an expanded scale with a gain factor of about 10. Now we can clearly see the beat notes get bigger as the sine wave reaches its peaks. Now we've inserted the sharp IF filter. The beat note is still present, but it's smaller. Now we've turned up the digital power to 4%. This is with no IF filtering to simulate a wide bandwidth receiver. The noise is bigger. Now we've switched in the sharp IF filter. As expected, the noise amplitude is reduced. Now we've turned up the digital power to 10%. This is with no IF filtering, but the 53 kilohertz post-detection filter is still present. the noise is still bigger. With the sharp IF filter switched in, the noise level goes down as we might expect. So that's what things look like in the time domain. Now let's look at the frequency domain. For this simulation, there's no analog modulation, just an unmodulated FM carrier with 1, 4, and 10% digital power. The graph stops at 125 kilohertz, so we don't see any of the first order beats. We only see the higher order terms, which are the complex beats between multiple IBOC carriers, the IBOC symbol rate and the FM analog carrier. Now, what's interesting here is that there's a block of noise at the low frequencies reaching highest energy between about 20 and 60 kilohertz. This will affect stereo reception, RDS, and SCA. Another interesting thing is that as the digital power increases by 10 dB, the noise floor increases by 20 dB. This is evidence of a higher order nonlinearity producing the lower frequency demodulated FM noise. The good news is that the monophonic part of the composite spectrum up to 15 kilohertz has the least amount of noise. That's your mono FM signal. Monophonic FM is quite robust. Here's the no FM case with the sharp filtering of the hybrid signal. That block of low frequency noise centered around 35 kilohertz has dropped about 15 dB, and the digital power dropped 6.7 dB because of the narrow filter. And this noise profile is really not too bad. Now we've added a 1.9 kilohertz tone at 75 kilohertz deviation to the analog signal. This is with the wide bandwidth receiver. With no digital signal present, which is the bottom curve there, the first order beats are extending down to about 54 kilohertz, so self-noise increases in the presence of FM deviation. Now here's what happens with our monophonic signal when we add sharp filtering. First, notice the purple trace, which shows the signal with no digital power. That spectrum is no longer perfect. The distortion is coming from the bandpass filtering of the FM signal by the narrow filter. There is a reduction of the noise level for the 1, 4, and 10% cases. Now let's look at stereo and the wideband receiver. We're modulating the analog FM 100%, but with a stereo left channel tone at 1.9 kilohertz. As before, with no digital, the demodulated signal is basically perfect. At high frequencies, above about 60 kilohertz, a 10 dB increase in digital power results in a 10 dB increase in noise. But down in the stereo composite area, below 50 kHz, a 10 dB digital power increase results in an increase in noise of almost 20 dB. Finally, here's what happens with single-channel stereo modulation and the sharp filter. At 1% digital power, the digital noise in the stereo composite region is largely masked by the filtering distortion. But at 10% digital power, the self-noise clearly dominates the filter-induced distortion. After doing all these simulations, we wanted to verify them with hardware. Could this really be right? So we got out an old but still very good Sansui tuner with a dual bandwidth IF. This is the tuner we used for the hardware tests. I think I bought it in 1977. Now you might ask, why use a tuner this old? Well, there's several reasons. First, this is a very good tuner. We made lab measurements on it. We have a schematic for it, so we know exactly what's going on inside. It has selectable bandwidths. And although it has stereo blending, the blending can be defeated for measurement purposes with a front panel switch. With more modern tuners, especially those which implement FM demodulation and DSP, there's no way to really know what the receiver is doing, whether it's changing its bandwidth, and what it is doing for stereo blend. This Sansui is the kind of tuner you want to use if you're taking measurements. You want to measure the received signal and not some mysterious proprietary noise reduction algorithms or dynamic IF bandwidth in a receiver. Remember the good old days when you bought something, the manufacturer supplied a schematic? Well, here's the complete schematic for that Sansui tuner. Inspection of this schematic shows how the tuner works, what it does, and what it does not do. Now, I know this is too small to read on the screen, but if you download this PowerPoint presentation later, you can see the Sansui tuner's specs. Now, I even found my old lab notes from 33 years ago when we measured the venerable Sansui tuner. And Jeff Mendenhall, who's in this room, he made these measurements, and I remember writing them down on this piece of quadrille paper 33 years ago. Yeah, with my green pen. Thank you, Jeff. for making the measurements. But with the Sansui tuner, here's what the composite output looks like with no HD. It's just a clean 400 hertz tone. Now we've turned on HD at 4% digital power with the tuner set to its narrow bandwidth. This waveform's picked up a little bit of fuzz, and it looks very much like the 4% time domain simulations shown earlier. With HD still at 4% digital power, the tuner's set to its wide bandwidth. The waveform has picked up substantially more fuzz in agreement with the simulations. Now here's the Sansui tuner composite output at 10% with a wide IF. The fuzz is larger near the peaks as predicted. The red trace is the time domain, and the lower magenta trace is the FFT, or the spectrum, of just those two cycles of 1 kilohertz. And finally, here's an FFT spectrum analysis of the noise showing a rise out around 54 kilohertz, also in agreement with the simulations. This particular FFT uses a lot more points for better resolution, and that's why it looks different from the previous slide. So I think we can say that we passed the sanity test. So what are these simulations and lab tests telling us? First, one of the surprises for me was that the simple frequency difference terms are not the only significant analog noise components. There are higher order distortion mechanisms causing noise at lower frequencies in the demodulated analog composite output. Second, the higher order noise increases. It increases twice as fast in dB with increasing digital power. A 10 dB increase in digital power increases the lower frequency analog noise by 20 dB. Fortunately, the lower frequency noise is lower in amplitude than the first order beats. Sharp filtering in receivers reduces but does not eliminate the self noise. We have no control over receiver bandwidth filtering, so IF bandwidth variation from receiver to receiver will affect self noise. Some receivers will sound a lot different than others. And finally, the FM monophonic part of the spectrum is largely unaffected. FM mono is robust. This is due to the higher modulation index at the lower frequencies, which is another way of describing the triangular noise spectrum of FM. Noise increases with modulating frequency. The 75 microsecond de-emphasis curve also helps reduce the noise in mono and stereo. Now here we calculate composite SNR values with the 53 kilohertz brick wall filter for different combinations of digital power and filter bandwidth. As you can see, the values range from about 37 to 54 dB. Now, composite SNR is not a familiar value, so let's try to relate composite SNR to the more familiar monophonic SNR and stereo SNR measurements. First, we have to make a couple assumptions. We assume that the channel noise is white, which produces a rising noise spectrum after detection. This is not exactly the case with IBOC, but it's a good place to start to get some ballpark SNR values. With this assumption, we can take the composite SNR value and add 29.6 dB to it to get the 15 kHz mono SNR with 75 microsecond de-emphasis. Once we have the mono SNR, then we can add the familiar 23 dB penalty for FM stereo to get stereo SNR. And the next table shows those results. This is a chart of dynamic SNR values, meaning in the presence of a tone, for composite, mono, and stereo. Mono varies from about 84 to 67 dB, which is great. Mono is robust. Stereo varies from about 61 down to 43 dB, so there may be some audible noise. Experimental results show that the noise does go down with reduced analog modulation, which makes sense. Our predicted dynamic stereo SNR was 43.5 dB for a wideband receiver. Lab tests with the Sansui tuner produced 41 dB. The conventionally measured stereo SNR with an unmodulated carrier except for the pilot was 46.5 dB. With no HD present, the tuner measures about 73 dB stereo SNR. All of this analysis was for the system operating in the basic MP1 hybrid mode. There are three extended hybrid modes which insert additional OFDM carriers and which increase the digital power by 10, 20, or 40% above the basic MP1 mode. The worst case would be the MP11 extended hybrid mode, which adds 40% more digital carriers and occupies 40% more spectrum. Here's what the basic MP1 signal looks like. The sidebands are shown slightly asymmetrical in this drawing because that's a possible mode of operation. The active sidebands are shown in green. They start at 129 kHz from channel center. When we change mode of operation to MP2, we add 10% more digital sidebands. These sidebands are on the inside of the sideband blocks, encroaching towards the analog signal. The additional sideband partitions are shown in blue here. The next higher mode of operation is MP3, for which we add 20% more digital sidebands. MP3 adds one more sideband partition on each side with a magenta block added. And finally, MP11 mode adds 40% more digital sidebands and 40% more digital power. MP11 adds two more sideband partitions on each side, and they're shown in red. The digital sidebands now encroach upon the analog signal coming in within 102 kHz of the channel center. The problem with the extended hybrid modes is that to varying degrees they approach on the analog signal. Carson's rule is a simplistic but generally accurate estimate of FM occupied bandwidth. Carson's rule says that if you add the peak deviation to the highest modulating frequency, you have an estimate of how far the FM sidebands extend each side of channel center. For FM stereo with no SCAs or RDS, the highest modulating frequency is 53 kHz. 53 plus 75 is 128 kHz. To the extent that Carson's rule is accurate, that means that the extended hybrid partitions overlap with the analog signal. And drawing the analog FM signal to occupy 256 kHz, we have the green triangle, and you can see that it overlaps with some of the extended mode sideband partitions. What this means is that if you think you might use an extended hybrid mode, be sure to include it in your listening tests, and we'll talk about the listening tests shortly. I'd also like to comment on peak-to-average ratio or crest factor reduction. It's not just for positive peak control anymore. There are three situations where crest factor reduction provides a benefit, and this ties into self-noise as well. First, when the FM and HD vectors are in phase, this produces a positive envelope modulation peaks. We want to control these peaks so that the transmitter does not have to produce extreme PEP. Controlling these peaks benefits the transmitter. Second, when the FM and HD vectors are out of phase, this produces a negative envelope modulation peak. We want to control these peaks so that the RF envelope does not approach pinch-off, and that benefits receivers. That leaves quadrature. When the FM and HD vectors are orthogonal, that is the point where we produce the peak phase modulation self-noise. We also want to control these peaks to avoid making impulsive self-noise. Ubiquiti's crest factor reduction controls the digital peaks for all possible phase relationships with the analog FM signal. And we believe this is a good thing. If we must transmit somewhat higher positive envelope peaks to reduce negative AM, this can be viewed as a good trade-off because it improves analog reception. It's important to consider the entire signal path, including the receiver, not just the transmitter. So we like Ubiquiti's peak control system. Now, theoretical calculations and simulations are good. Objective lab measurements with tones are good, too. These calculations and measurements help us understand the mechanisms for self-noise. But the bottom line is, what does it sound like? This is a subjective evaluation. There may be a wide range of opinions, and your opinion as a broadcaster is the most important one. Before deciding on an IBOC power level, I would suggest taking your exciter and at low power, do some careful listening tests with a variety of receivers with the program material and audio processing you normally use. Try different power levels to see how much digital power you can tolerate. Use headphones if you have ambient noise. Next, we're going to listen to some subjective evaluation recordings. These were recorded as uncompressed wave files so that we can be sure that we're hearing IBOC effects only and not compression artifacts. We used the same Sansui TU9900 tuner with both wide and narrow IF bandwidths. We tested with speech, classical music, and rock. We used an Orban 8500 Optimod processor feeding a Continental embedded exporter and 802EX FM HD exciter at 10% digital power for all tests. RF power into the tuner was minus 36 dBm, and the tuner's antenna attenuator was switched in. So the signal was clean, strong, and had no multipath and no interference. That's as good as it gets. We also limited testing to the MP1 mode only. The MP1 mode encroaches least into the analog FM. Here's our first test. This is speech. And to find a sufficiently long sample of speech on a CD, I had to use one of my niece's storybook CDs. So just pretend that this is a newscast or a commercial. You'll hear each chunk of speech repeat. The first instance will be analog FM only, and the second time you hear it, it will be with 10% HD present. This is the Optimod is set to the news talk preset, and the tuner's in the wide bandwidth mode.
Oh, boy. What a beautiful day at the bottom of the ocean. Oh, boy. What a beautiful day at the bottom of the ocean. Hello, Aunt Pearl. Hello, Uncle Shiny. Oh, hello there at home. My name is Clammy. Hello, Aunt Pearl. Hello, Uncle Shiny. Oh, hello there at home. My name is Clammy. Oh, it's a beautiful day at the bottom of the ocean. You know why I like today at the bottom of the ocean? Oh, it's a beautiful day at the bottom of the ocean. You know why I like today at the bottom of the ocean? Because today is a day when all the mermaids are in school. Because today is a day when all the mermaids are in school. And that means that Goldilocks the mermaid is nowhere to be found. Thank goodness. And that means that Goldilocks the mermaid is nowhere to be found. Thank goodness.
It's hard for me to hear up at the podium because of all the reverb, but could you hear the effect? Okay, I see some heads nodding. The reverb tends to cover up the noise in this room, at least from up here on the podium. Now, this will be the same test, but with the tuner in the narrow bandwidth mode. The noise is still there, but it has been knocked down substantially.
Oh, boy. What a beautiful day at the bottom of the ocean. Oh, boy. What a beautiful day at the bottom of the ocean. Hello, Aunt Pearl. Hello, Uncle Shiny. Oh, hello there at home. My name is Clammy. Hello, Aunt Pearl. Hello, Uncle Shiny. Oh, hello there at home. My name is Clammy. Oh, it's a beautiful day at the bottom of the ocean. You know why I like today at the bottom of the ocean? Oh, it's a beautiful day at the bottom of the ocean. You know why I like today at the bottom of the ocean? Because today is a day when all the mermaids are in school. Because today is a day when all the mermaids are in school. And that means that Goldilocks the mermaid is nowhere to be found. Thank goodness. And that means that Goldilocks the mermaid is nowhere to be found. Thank goodness.
The next test is listening to the left minus right audio from the tuner. Nobody does this normally, but it shows something very interesting. Remember that our simulation showed that as FM deviation increases, the self-noise also increases. This is because the analog carrier, which is moving because of the FM, gets closer to the blocks of the iBox sidebands. That produces lower frequency beats, which get into the left minus right channel centered at 38 kilohertz. Well, in this test, you can hear that effect at work. You can hear the noise breathe with the speech level. This test was done with the wide bandwidth of the tuner. Because left and right were not perfectly balanced, there is a component of the speech in the left minus right signal. Also, because of the slight level imbalance, the Optimod clipping differences between left and right show up as a pretty raspy distortion. Again, nobody listens to FM this way, but this test is to clearly demonstrate the noise that shows up in left minus right with the program material mostly canceled out. By separating the self-noise this way, you will know what to listen for in your own testing.
Oh, boy. What a beautiful day at the bottom of the ocean. Oh, boy. What a beautiful day at the bottom of the ocean. Hello, Aunt Pearl. Hello, Uncle Shiny. Oh, hello there at home. My name is Clammy. Hello, Aunt Pearl. Hello, Uncle Shiny. Oh, hello there at home. My name is Clammy. Oh, it's a beautiful day at the bottom of the ocean. You know why I like today at the bottom of the ocean? Oh, it's a beautiful day at the bottom of the ocean. You know why I like today at the bottom of the ocean? Because today is a day when all the mermaids are in school. Because today is a day when all the mermaids are in school. And that means that Goldilocks the mermaid is nowhere to be found. Thank goodness. And that means that Goldilocks the mermaid is nowhere to be found.
Now let's try classical music. For this, we set the Optimod to the 5-band classical music factory preset with AGC. The peak analog modulation dropped somewhat to about 60 to 75% on the loud passages. The Optimod also preserves a lot more of the source material's dynamic range in this mode, so quiet passages are down in the 10% peak modulation range. To help identify the changes between analog only and analog plus HD, we've inserted some bidoop tones with apologies to the old Mutual network. A high-low tone indicates analog only. The low-high tone indicates analog plus 10% HD. The tuner's in the wide bandwidth mode. The source material is the Gloria from Mozart's Great Mass in C minor. Now let's try some rock music. The Optimod is in the rock medium factory preset. Again, each segment repeats, first with analog only, and then with 10% HD. The tones are used to indicate the transitions. Unlike with the classical music example, analog modulation is consistently hitting 100%, except for the very beginning and the end at the fade-out. Okay, maybe it's a little bit more subtle with the rock music. Now, it's not my job to make subjective conclusions. You have to draw your own conclusions after doing your own listening tests, and this is not something that's very hard to do. But we can safely say that there's a wide range of subjective results. So take your exciter, set it to different power levels, different digital power levels, use your normal analog processing and program material, and listen with several different receivers. Use headphones if there's ambient noise. Then figure out how much IBOC power you want to use. There are some other researchers who have produced reports on the effects of IBOC self-noise. Brian Beasley has prepared a number of reports. If you Google K6 STI, you'll find his 88 to 108 megahertz webpage. Brian's work addresses other issues we've not discussed here, in particular the use of square wave stereo decoders, which have responsive odd harmonics of 38 kilohertz. In other words, they demodulate anything they find at 114 kilohertz and centered at 190 kilohertz and so forth, where there can be strong IBOC self-noise components. Now, I measured the Sansui tuner's response to third harmonic of 38 kilohertz and found that it is down 18 dB with respect to 38 kilohertz. It happens to use a diode ring modulator for L-R detection, evidently not driven to full saturation. A square wave demodulator, where it would be driven to full saturation, would be worse since it's only down 9.5 dB at 114 kHz, looking at the third harmonic Fourier term. A true multiplier or a Walsh function stereo decoder would do a better job. The red box points to the Sansui tuner's stereo demodulator, which is a diode ring modulator. Because we have the schematic, we have a better understanding of what the tuner's doing. Now, broadcasters must make the decision about what digital power level to use. Every situation's different. To state the obvious, you want to turn it up enough, but not too much. And hopefully those ranges of not enough and too much do not overlap. Enough means having a digital signal power level that gives you the digital coverage that you want. Too much means adversely affecting your analog FM signal. What is too much depends on your format, your terrain, your listeners, and many other factors. If your format is classical music or anything with a wide dynamic range, which may include speech, some noise may be audible, especially on receivers with wide IF bandwidths. On the other hand, if you run aggressive audio processing, then self-noise may be completely masked by the analog FM modulation. Multipath effects may be aggravated by running a lot of digital power because of differential fading between analog and digital components, causing envelope pinch-off at the receiver's detector. So your terrain and propagation paths may be a factor. If you're listening in a car, road noise is probably going to dominate any self-noise, and receiver blending will help. Mono reception is robust and mostly unaffected. If you're broadcasting in mono, you're probably okay. Here are a few cautionary notes. First, do not over-deviate the analog. That pushes the instantaneous FM carrier closer to the iBox sidebands, which produces more noise below 53 kilohertz, where it's going to show up in left minus right. Second, PAR reduction systems should reduce positive envelope peaks for the transmitter and negative envelope peaks for the benefit of the receiver. Don't pinch off the FM envelope. Here are a few suggestions. First, common amplification benefits extend to 4% and 10% digital power. It's possible to meet the mask at 10% digital power with no high power mask filtering. Common amplification is simple. Efficiency is reasonable because signal statistics are somewhat better than DTV, even at 10% power, meaning lower peak to average ratios, even at 10% power. Tube technology is still quite economical for producing the increased PEP required for elevated HD. And a few more suggestions include the possibility of water cooling if there's limited space or air conditioning available. Although the average power will be not much greater than the analog signal alone, the PEP capability of coax, combiners, filters, and the antenna should be checked to make sure that there will not be a PEP problem. As we deploy elevated HD power, built-in exciter analysis capability, such as Continental's InSight system, gives you access to some useful measurements. I'll show you just a few very briefly. InSight can show you a lot of things. Here's a transmitter output spectrum display, and here's a demodulated constellation with the data carriers shown in red and the pilot carriers shown in blue and green. And here's a peak-to-average ratio display, which will be familiar to those of you who have worked with DTV transmitters. And here's a nonlinear equalizer display. These are just a few of the things that you can monitor from the exciter with InSight. In conclusion, good engineering is about making optimum trade-offs. The trade-off here is digital coverage versus analog signal quality. Most of your audience listens to the analog signal, so keep it clean enough. Every station situation is different, so you'll have to evaluate each station for the best digital power level. Good engineering requires good information, and we hope that this information helps you. Thank you for your attention. If there are any questions, I'll try to answer them now. I see a few already.
The PowerPoint presentation is available online by email.
Yeah, I gave it to Leonard, and it will be on the web. And in addition to the audio files that were here, which I shortened down to like 1 to 3 minutes, longer versions of all those different audio files, and a few more that I didn't play, will be included as part of that package. It's pretty big. It's like 200 megabytes of stuff. There's another question.
Hi, Dave. Just noticed in your audio files that during quiet passages or otherwise programmed silence passages, there was white noise. Do you think that's the wide IF just actually incorporating the digital carriers into the demodulation?
That's exactly the point.
Okay.
That's the point.
And that would be not a Sansui tuner. It would be many of the clock radios and things like that.
Any stereo receiver. The mono. If you receive in mono, it'll sound fine.
Well, I wondered, too, if the pilot wasn't beating against the digital carriers and so forth and causing that white noise, too. Maybe.
Well, the pilot is certainly getting in on the act because it's just a big nonlinear hodgepodge of all kinds of things beating against each other, creating complex beat notes. It's not just first-order terms. There's a lot of high-order stuff going on.
I have two questions, Dave. First, and this is strictly from our experience, we've noticed that... Receive receivers and receive locations that were, shall we say, marginal in analog only, when you apply HD, suddenly have some self-noise. Does the is there any proof that the HD carriers, even at 1% injection, are doing something to make the receiver appear to see more multipath? That's the first question.
We didn't do any subjective testing at 1%, but all the simulation data obviously included it. But, you know, just speaking intuitively based on what I've seen, I think that makes sense, because if you're in an area where analog reception is marginal, there probably is already some multipath. And multipath is going to aggravate the peak-to-average ratio, and negative modulation peaks will probably, some of them are going to go farther negative than they would be if there hadn't been any multipath. So I would expect things to be a little bit worse, you know, out at the fringe.
Okay, second question. Many, many years ago, we did some testing for SCA immunity in receivers. And we found that the IF passband symmetry and flatness were very important. Is this true also with HD?
Yeah, that's the question had kind of two parts. And yes, I fully agree that the bandpass symmetry is very important in analog FM reception, especially when you get a low modulation index, as you have up at the SCA carrier region. So symmetry is important. And the second part of the question had to do with does symmetry help HD? And I think the answer to that is no, because the iBox sidebands are not symmetrical. They're completely independent from each other. So I don't think symmetry is going to help a receiver.
Would not symmetry help an analog receiver reject the iBox?
You mean if the sidebands were symmetrical?
Yeah. No. Under normal iBox conditions, would mm-hmm. symmetry of the passband on an analog receiver improve rejection over, say, asymmetry of some sort?
I don't think so. I think it would have very little effect, again, because the sidebands themselves, the digital sidebands, are completely asymmetrical. I mean, not in terms of power, but there's different data. The upper sideband is not a mirror image of the lower sideband. If they were perfect mirror images, then I would think that it might help some, but the other thing that's going on is you're creating these complex beat notes where the carrier is deviating on the analog signal. If you had no analog modulation at all, I think it would probably help. But as soon as that FM carrier starts deviating, then all of a sudden the beat notes are not symmetrical anymore, even if you have a symmetrical IF bandpass.
One important consideration not mentioned here was the changing of the algorithm in the digital sidebands to improve the peak-to-average ratio of the digital signal. Have you evaluated what effect that might have on this discussion with regards to noise appearing in the analog signal? Would peak-to-average ratio, reduction in peak-to-average ratio, improve the situation?
I would think only in situations where you are right on the edge of multipath, where if you had one kind of PAR, maybe the envelope is pinching off and there's digital capture of the analog FM detector going on. And another kind of PAR, maybe you're not quite pinching off the envelope. So I wouldn't expect that to have a big effect, because it's the average power that determines the white noise level. And in multipath, in multipath situations, I think only when you're right at the edge, which isn't very often, would it make a difference, I think.
Yeah, to follow up on Gordon's point about fringe reception being bothered by even normal injection levels of HD, that's been our experience at Wisconsin Public Radio, that if somebody's in a bad spot or
in far-out reception, and we are running in stereo on that particular station. It seems to be a pretty sure thing that they'll have a little more trouble with digital. And the expectation is that higher the digital carriers go, the more that effect will be present. And it's supported by some stuff I did many years ago where I tested the addition of additional SCA carriers mm-hmm. onto an FM signal. And I had listeners with variety of receivers in different tough locations, tough reception locations, either because of multipath close in or out on the fringe. And the more carriers, the more energy you had out in these high frequency ranges, the worse their reception got. So now we do that with digital, and it's pretty much the same problem. But it may be worth it to have the digital capability. It's a trade-off.
Yeah, well, that's my point. You're going to have to do your own evaluation and weigh the trade-offs, because nothing comes for free. There will be effects either way. You know, with more digital power, you get better digital coverage, but at the expense of analog and FM. And you might even want to change over time. So if we have more IBOC receivers in the future, well, then maybe that would be a good time to turn up your power at that point rather than now.
I gave the mic back too fast. Another consideration is deciding to go to mono for your analog. And we do that on a number of our stations that do primarily talk programming. They are much more resilient in terms of the effect of HD. It doesn't hardly make any difference at all.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the audio files that will be posted on the website is mono reception of a stereo signal, and it sounds just fine. Even with 10% HD power and the wide bandwidth, it sounds fine. All of these effects are in the L minus R. Any other questions? Okay, well, thank you very much.